from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Lucas Kuntz embarked on quite the political journey over the past 2 years. After coming up short in a 2022 Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate against Trudy Bush Valentine, Kuntz is now trying to oust GOP U.S. Senator Josh Hawley. And this time around, Kuntz possesses a massive advantage in both fundraising and endorsements over State Senator Carla May. And while Missouri voters have tended to back GOP candidates for statewide posts over the past decade, Kuntz is hoping to break that streak in the fall, especially as he could be running alongside a ballot initiative legalizing abortion throughout the state. Joining us in the studio is Lucas Kuntz. The Independence resident is an attorney who spent 13 years serving in the United States Marine Corps. Lucas, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Yeah, awesome. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the biggest news of the week, month, year, decade. President Joe Biden announcing that he was bowing out of running for re-election. He endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris, as did a number of other Missouri Democratic political figures. Harris is almost certainly going to be the Democratic nominee. Will you be supporting her? And what do you think of her effect on this race?
You know, I think a lot of people are really, really excited about this, and I think that they should be. It's really a historic moment, and I think the excitement's warranted. You know, as far as like endorsing or whatever else, you know, I'm asking enough people to vote for me right now that I'm not running around asking people to vote for anybody else. You know, I'm focused on my race, but I see the excitement, and I think it's really neat for everybody.
How do you think having Harris at the top of the ticket will change the general election contest against Senator Hawley? It's kind of hard to guess like how a presidential candidate is going to do like 5 months before. But you know, especially as a federal candidate, the presidential race has a major impact on races like yours. So I'd be interested to hear how it's going to affect, if at all.
You know, I think it's unlikely that, you know, whoever the national candidates are for either party are really going to be spending a lot of time here in Missouri and doing stuff. And so, you know, for me, I've made sure to put myself in position to beat Josh Hawley this entire time. You know, a year ago, we were in position and on track to beat him. A month ago, we were on track to beat him. And right now, we're on track to beat him. So, you know, I'm just really excited about the fact that, you know, my race and the abortion petition, which you just mentioned, those are going to be the real top of the ticket drivers here in Missouri. And we're both doing what it takes to win, and we're both going to win in November.
So before you get to November, you do have to get through a Democratic primary. And that leads us to one of our listener questions for you from Mama Red Hen on Reddit. Why should we choose Kuntz over someone like Carla May? I feel she has more of a record and clear policies than I've seen from Kuntz. We all need to get behind one candidate. Convince me to get behind you. So convince Mama Red Hen on Reddit that you're
well,
the candidate.
Well, sure, Mama Redhead. You know, what I want to do in this race and when I'm in the U.S. Senate is fundamentally change who has power in this country. And, you know, there's a reason organizations like the AFL-CIO endorsed me earlier than they've ever endorsed a Senate challenger in this state before. And it's, you know, just to take a minute to talk about my background, you know, I am your classic Missourian. You know, my parents were mid-Missouri folks, Hickman and Rockbridge. They got married at 19 and 22 years old. You know, they were Catholic and they followed the rules. And if anybody knows what that means, right, that's kid. And that classic Missouri paycheck to paycheck lifestyle. And, you know, for us, we lived in a working class neighborhood in mid-Missouri. And it was just, you know, it was a really beautiful place to live. And I probably didn't even realize it until, you know, I was about 8 years old. And you know, this is the reason that my parents stopped at having four kids is because my little sister was born with a very serious heart condition. And, you know, it was really, really hard on our family. She had to have open heart surgery. She was flown up here on a helicopter to St. Louis. My parents were gone a lot. And if anybody knows what happens to a paycheck to paycheck family when medical bills hit in this country and in this state, it's devastating. And so, you know, my parents went bankrupt within 2 months. It was really hard on us. And I just, you know, I learned the strength that we have in our communities because when my family was truly at its very lowest and we weren't sure what was going to happen, you know, the people in that neighborhood who had no more money than we did, like no more money than we did, right? Like this was the folks in the working class neighborhood. Our friends down at church passed the plate for us, Folks brought more food by the house than we could ever eat. You know, while my parents were in St. Louis for weeks on end, everybody took us into their homes and took care of us. And for me, you know, that's the strength that we have in this state. It's the strength we have in our communities when we're invested in. And when I talk about that all around the state, you know, it seems that everybody's been a part of that on one side or the other, except for Josh Hawley. And we're going to remind everybody of that every single day through this campaign. And the fact that I've spent my entire life trying to pay that community back for what they did for me. I mean, you know, I joined the United States Marine Corps. I deployed to Iraq. I deployed to Afghanistan twice. I really did everything I could to try to pay everybody back. And the thing that burns me up is, you know, people wonder what's motivating me to do this race. It's thinking that I was serving that community and taking care of everyone who took care of me. And then watching country club politicians like Josh Hawley literally wage war on the neighborhood I grew up in. And if you go back there today, you know, the first house I lived in is an empty lot. The one I joined the Marine Corps out of is boarded up to keep the squatters out. The store where my little sister and I used to go buy candy and, like, you know, Mountain Dew refills for my mom was shut down because it's been robbed so many times it can't get insurance. I'm running this campaign taking no money from corporate PACs, no money from federal lobbyists, no money from big farm executives, no money from big fossil fuel executives, because I'm tired of those people stripping the communities like the one I grew up in for parts, and the only people I ever want to owe are those in that old neighborhood.
So you mentioned this, but one of the reasons you've emerged as the clear front runner in the Democratic primary is the fact that organized labor groups have backed your candidacy, not only the AFL-CIO of Missouri, but scores of individual labor unions. So as somebody who is part of two labor unions, one who has endorsed you, SEIU, and one who has endorsed Carla May, CWA, I'd be interested in how you've been personally affected by unions throughout your professional and personal life and why you think you're the best candidate for labor.
You know, in that neighborhood that I grew up in, a union job was your golden ticket to stay in the middle class. Like, that's it. That's what people strive for, because that meant you were going to be safe, you were going to be protected, and you had power. And, you know, my entire campaign is about fundamentally changing who has power in this country. As for me personally, you know, my sister was in a teacher's union that protected her, very strongly. My wife is unionized. She's part of the bargaining committee down at her workplace. Like, this is personal to me. Labor is personal to me because I truly believe that the only way we're going to have power in this country, all of us, against these massive corporations who, you know, buy off politicians to take advantage of us, the only way we get power is by being able to come together and organize and come together as one and stand in solidarity. So this is personally important for me. Professionally, it's important to me. And I think it's really the front line in the fight to keep America and Missouri as places where you have a strong middle class and people can have dreams and opportunity.
Hawley has spent the past few months trying to showcase some commonalities with organized labor, and I believe he even received some kind words from Teamsters President Sean O'Brien at the Republican National Convention. You know, to me, that's not surprising that he's taking this strategy, because a lot of rank-and-file union workers, especially in the trades, are socially conservative, and he may be trying to make inroads with them. But what's your message to union members who may be curious about Josh Hawley, about why they should support somebody like you in November?
Look, Josh Hawley, he's a fraud, right? We all know that. We saw him pump his fist on January 6th when he thought it was going to get him some power, and then skitter out the back door minutes later when things got real and he was like, oh God, now I'm in trouble, right? And that's what his political career is right now, right? He was a country club Republican in 2018 when he first ran for this office and only got 51% of the vote, I might add. Like, not a big victory. He was supported by Jack Danforth, our moderate former senator. Like, that was his persona. He lost all that after January 6th, and he's trying to redefine himself. But he's still the same guy who was packed by billionaires like Peter Thiel, right? I mean, if you want to talk about a guy who's anti-labor, like, some people might think, maybe Roy Blunt, former Republican senator here. Well, when the CHIPS Act, when there was a vote to protect prevailing wage in the CHIPS Act, Roy Blunt actually voted to protect prevailing wage, and Josh Hawley voted against it.
Yeah, not to get into inside baseball, but, like, the Blunts have been a little bit more labor-friendly throughout their career than Hawley has, but continue.
Well, significantly more, and so that's just it. Like, you know, the guy's a fraud who's trying to redefine himself, but he's the guy who, when he was attorney general, one of the first things he did was lead a lawsuit to make sure more than 200,000 Missourians would lose their overtime pay. You know, that's 36,000 here in St. Louis County area, another 15,000 in St. Charles County. Like, that is the money that in neighborhoods like the one I grew up in, we used to buy our kids a second pair of shoes during the school year, something my parents struggled with. It's the money we use to take care of each other, like, you know, people took care of my family. So he's been anti-worker from day one. I don't really care what happens at the national level. Like, Missouri labor understands and knows that I'm the candidate that's going to protect them. I'm the only one that's going to vote for the PRO Act, Protecting the Right to Organize Act, which gives us the ability to organize.
We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Lucas Kuntz, a Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. Welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. We now return to our conversation with Lucas Kuntz, a Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate. If you get the nomination next month, you will likely be running alongside the ballot initiative legalizing abortion up to what's known as fetal viability. And that's defined in the proposal as when a healthcare professional determines, quote, there's a significant likelihood of the fetus's sustained survival outside the uterus without the application of extraordinary medical measures. Now, Republicans who have come on this show have said Missourians won't accept this amendment because they feel that this amendment goes too far. Why do you think that they are wrong and maybe would accept putting abortion rights in the Constitution?
Missourians have been trying to claw back power for themselves for a while now through the initiative petition process. I mean, we see it over and over again, right? We passed a minimum wage that's $5 over the federal level. We overturned the anti-union right to work legislation, which, by the way, Josh Hawley supported. We overturned that 68%, 32%, right? Huge margins. We expanded Medicaid. We legalized weed. Like, Missourians are in a position right now where they are tired of control freak politicians telling them what to do and taking away their rights. And there's no better example on that than this abortion petition and Josh Hawley being on the ballot, right? Like, both of those are positions where Missourians are going to have the opportunity to take back their rights, and they're going to do it. I mean, you know, Josh Hawley is crazy on this issue. I mean, he thinks that in vitro fertilization and certain types of contraception or abortion, he's built a family business with his wife around taking away people's rights to access reproductive health care. I mean, the guy goes so far as to say that he thinks no-fault divorce should disappear. You know, the ability for people to get out of dangerous marriages should be gone. And it's just like, that is extreme controlling political stuff that nobody in this state wants.
Let's shift to foreign policy for a bit. If you were in the United States Senate now, would you support U.S. aid to Israel, especially since the military invasion of Gaza sparked worldwide and nationwide condemnation?
You know, we all saw what happened on October 7th. It was a real unchecked aggression and tragedy. You know, kids at a music festival getting attacked, hostages being taken, thousands being killed. And I believe Israel had a right to defend itself. And what we've seen over the ensuing months is a situation where, unfortunately, and really sadly, a lot more innocent people have died, particularly in Palestine and Gaza and also in Israel. And so, you know, for me, I think we really need to get into a negotiated ceasefire. The United States should use their leverage there. I've done U.S. arms control negotiations with NATO and Russia. I know we have a lot of levers we can pull. And some of it is just showing up and getting the sides to do the right thing. And so I just, you know, I think we have an opportunity to get the hostages back and to get to negotiated ceasefire, and we shouldn't give up on that.
Should one of the sticks potentially be you either go to the negotiating table by you, I mean Israel, or we stop giving you weapons and we stop giving you aid?
You know, I think we need to consider what we need to consider. And I think there's a lot going on right now. And, you know, one of the things I learned in our arms control negotiations is that ultimatums don't really work. You really just have to have the conversations. You have to have both sides willing to do it. And right now you got what appears to be a pretty bad actor in Netanyahu, and you got pretty bad actors in Hamas, and the people who are suffering is everybody in the middle.
On Ukraine, Senator Hawley has been an outspoken critic of continued aid to repel Russia's invasion. He and other Republicans have argued that the aid is wasteful when there's no coherent plan for victory. What do you think about Hawley's position on this issue, and would you place any conditions for your support on Ukraine aid if you replace him in the Senate?
You know, I spent 13 years negotiating with Russians. Like, I've sat across the table personally from their deputy foreign minister. I went overseas many times to do that and negotiated with our NATO allies on this. Like, we saw the buildup coming. We saw the war coming. And like, it is absolutely cartoonish for these guys to act like Russia isn't a threat. And it's even worse for them to want to just neglect it, because what that's going to do is that's going to lead to much more expensive boots on the ground war in the future. And so here, you know, it's like they always say, sometimes I forget the quote, but it's like, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? Like, what we have to do here is make sure that this doesn't get worse and contain it. And I'm the world's biggest advocate against these forever wars, right? Like, I served in Iraq and Afghanistan. I watched us light $6.4 trillion on fire over there. These same politicians who now don't want to spend, you know, to keep this contained, wanted to spend forever to protect, you know, investments by oil companies. And it's absolutely crazy to me that you guys are so cartoonish about this, especially when they all want to go to war with China over Taiwan, which is going to cost an obscene amount of money when we should be investing, you know, any money we would put towards a war there in the next generation of American energy and production, so that China's afraid to go to war with us.
That was actually going to be my next question. Do you think that there's anything that America could do to successfully prepare Taiwan for an invasion when China has a much bigger and more sophisticated military? I'm not saying we should like take away all their weapons, but it seems like we would have to invest hundreds of billions of dollars to allow them to successfully repel an invasion.
No, I mean, what we need to do right now is we need to make stuff in America again, because that's what gives us leverage. You know, it gives us good union jobs, it gives us production and national independence, but it also gives us international leverage over, you know, supply chains and markets that we don't have right now because we outsourced everything. And I've literally seen this personally. I went over and over again when Russia was building up and modernizing its military to meet with our NATO allies. And over again, these guys, you know, I would say, you know, these guys are building up. You can see another war coming. Again, this is after they'd already invaded Crimea and the Donbass. So like, things had already happened. And again, our European allies didn't take hard positions, because they were hooked on cheap Russian natural gas, right? They were buying gas from Russia, and they're like, well, you know, that is really scary. Could you guys send over more troops and equipment to protect us from that threat that we're funding? Which is like kind of crazy, right? That the American taxpayer is doing that. And so what you see right there is you see that the ability of a market to control foreign countries and keep them from interdicting in something before it happens. And so like, what we need to do is build out the next generation of energy right here in America, the next generation of industry. We need to produce things again so that China doesn't want to go to war over Taiwan, because they're worried that they're going to lose that supply chain.
I think they want to go to war with Taiwan because they think Taiwan is part of China, though. It seems like that's
less
about that.
But they're not going to want to do it if they're going to lose their supply chain.
That's true. So we got a couple of other listener questions, including this one from My Beans on Reddit. What are Kuntz's thoughts on public transportation, high-speed rail, pedestrian safety, and car dependency in Missouri? And I guess I'll add a question to that. What would you do as a senator to further those things that My Beans from Reddit wants?
I mean, what we have to do, and I kind of touched on this a little bit, is like, we need to invest in the next generation of production and the next generation of energy. And we should be doing that in Missouri. I have a Marshall Plan to build out the next generation of energy right here in Missouri, to make our houses more efficient, to make our automobiles and our transportation more efficient, and put a bunch of, you know, good union workers to work. We have the capacity to do that. And, you know, as far as where we go on transportation, I mean, a lot of that's related to infrastructure. And so this is where I have I guess me and Roy Blunt have very different opinion of what a U.S. senator's job is compared to Josh Hawley. You know, Roy Blunt brought $350 million a year in projects back to this state. And he'd work with people on both sides of the aisle, including Emanuel Cleaver, to bring projects to this state.
Through the earmarking process, by the way.
Pardon me?
Through the earmarking process.
Yeah, that's right. Through the earmarking process. And Josh Hawley refuses to do that. So while Roy Blunt would bring $350 million a year, like, we have lost that because Hawley refuses to mark that money for our state. And I think that's criminal. And I think it's why we're in such a bad position. And, you know, my top job as a U.S. senator is to do things like bring that money back, but also vote for infrastructure bills like Hawley voted against, vote for building out the next generation of energy here and things like that. It's all about investment, and it's investment that he's been unwilling and refused to take.
We got another listener question from Ariel Somersaults from Reddit. By the way, don't you love these usernames from Reddit? I mention this all the time on this show. That's the best part.
Yeah, they don't like put their real names
no,
at the end.
No, all monikers.
Russian bots, man.
You know, they may either be Russian bots, or we need one that's like Lucas Kuntz is terrible from Reddit. But then you'd probably know what the question is. It'd probably be a troll question. What policies would you pursue to help St. Louis maintain its aging public housing stock, especially senior living facilities. You kind of touched on this in your last answer about rehabbing homes, but I think this is specifically about public housing. What would you do on that front?
You know, one of the things that we have really lost every year, there's less and less of it since the 1970s, is community development block grants. And, you know, it's something that my representative, Emmanuel Cleaver, is big on. It's something that we used to have money here for, and it's a way for local communities to, you know, problem solve and take federal money and solve local problems exactly like this. And the fact that that's so underfunded is just a real tragedy for me. So I think that, you know, we need to reinvest in things like community development block grants that people locally can use to solve problems like this that they know about and that, you know, the federal government doesn't necessarily know about.
Lucas Kuntz is a Democratic contender for Missouri's U.S. Senate seat. We had his main opponent, State Senator Carla May, on the show a couple of weeks ago, and you can listen to that interview at stlpr.org or wherever you get your podcast. Lucas, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Catch you next time.
And joining us now to talk about Kuntz's interview is Sarah Kellogg, who covers all things state government and state politics for St. Louis Public Radio. Sarah, welcome back.
Hi, Jason. Good to be back.
So we both interviewed Kuntz in 2022 together when he ran against Trudy Bush Valentine. Do you think he's changed his style or approach since that point in time?
I do think he has. I think he kind of had it dialed up to 11, I think, in 2022 when it came to that campaign. There was definitely like an intensity there. I think there's probably a comfortableness of being a candidate. I also will say that was a nasty campaign between those two candidates in 2022 versus now, where I feel like he and Senator May are, you know, there's the likeness there. There's a good, at least, rapport. I think they like each other. So there's not really a negativeness that was there. So I think that's also impacted how he has run this campaign. There's kind of a self-assuredness, I think, and that's it's translated well, where he's sticking to what he knows and it's not like super, super intense.
So Kuntz is definitely the favorite in this primary just because his fundraising advantage over May is just so massive. But him not endorsing Vice President Harris for president, which was reported on earlier this week by the Post-Dispatch, but you heard in our interview he didn't do it with me. It's provoked some criticism online, with the caveat that Twitter or X isn't real life. Was that a mistake for Kuntz not to publicly back the VP there?
You know, I'm not sure that it is. Again, Harris, though she is on track to become the nominee, she isn't the official nominee yet. I think that the fact that he's more focused on his own race, I think, is a good answer to that. It's like, I'm worried about my own race right now before I worry about the presidential race. I think also, if correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe he's a delegate. So there's not really like a, oh, who am I going to vote for in the convention to be the nominee? So I don't think it's a huge mishap, but I think, you know, weeks go by, people won't remember that really.
Now, let's be clear. Harris is not going to win Missouri, but I do see a scenario where Harris helps people like Kuntz or Senator May by hypercharging turnout among Black and female voters, especially with the abortion initiative likely to make the ballot. What do you think about that possibility?
I do see kind of a greater energy among Black people and women and LGBTQ people, like as far as like voting for Harris, and that could trickle down. I do think you're right. I don't think Harris is going to win Missouri, but I do think that there's kind of that bump. But I honestly, and I said this before, I think the biggest bump is that is abortion ballot, because that will affect Missouri in Missourians. You know, so people who are getting out to vote for that, I think that along with Harris could be definitely bumps for both Kuntz or May or, you know, the Democratic governor candidate, whoever it could be. I see kind of being a boon for them.
Very quickly, for his part, Holly is expecting a competitive and expensive race. Do you think Missourians, though, are going to be turned off by his controversies, especially what happened on January 6, 2021?
I think the fundraising that Kuntz has gathered is evident enough that there are people that have been turned off by Holly in his past 6 years as senator. But I just don't know if it's going to be like enough to change the outcome of the race, because I know Holly is the favorite. But I definitely think that's definitely, you know, he's probably lost some voters that he had back in 20, you know, which when he was elected.
Sarah Kellogg is St. Louis Public Radio state government and politics reporter. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
You got it, Jason.
This episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum
and edited by Maya Norfleet.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.